I want those huge Isolinia shits. I was about to... Nothing like a good Isolinia shit.
There isn't.
That happens
really.
If you drink too much Ractogeno.
Mine always happens after Thai food.
Captain's Pod, Stardate 15/60/74.1. Welcome aboard the Starship's Enterprise. Thank you for joining us as we take a brief short leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she tried to abandon the Sinterprise in deep space for 1,000 years.
I did.
It's Ambassador Danae.
For the record, I thought it was the DERPA Prize.
That's a lie. That's a bold-faced
lie. I was drunk on some Romulan ale, which is the only alcoholic beverage I know to reference on Star Trek still to this day. So I'm still, I don't have
Picard.
A diverse protophile. Protophile?
You're just making up Star Trek words.
What is that?
Here's your ambassador's protophile. It's something that lives inside her.
That sounds really, jail-worthy.
Protophile? Oh, no!
Anyway,
I don't know what that means.
I was trying to say that I was drunk and thought I was on the DERPA Prize, but
that makes sense.
Now,
so the DERPA Prize looked straight, and the Sinter Prize looked wobbly.
Yeah,
we need to watch that specific episode of Voyager that you just described. But that's for much later in the show when we describe some episodes. But this week, before we get into getting back into some singular episodes of Star Trek, let's do an email or two.
Emails.
Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, well, email. Now, the last 9 weeks or so have all been about your email predictions for Discovery, which has been so much fun. So we're going to get back into some generic and lovely emails now. Remember, you can send your questions, Trek or not Trek related, or anything you want to talk about to captainspod@cinemasins.com. The other best place to go is discord.gg/cinemasins, where we have a lovely Star Trek community. This email does not come with a pronunciation, so I apologize in advance. I believe this is from Xiaoci, Xiaoci. I think I did pretty good. Captain Ian and Ambassador Danae.
That's me!
I had a dream come true.
Oh my god, that's so scary.
If it's anything to do with us, it is.
I've had some scary dreams recently that
your dreams to come true.
Yeah, when I woke up, I thought, oh god, I'm so glad I'm in reality.
Yeah.
Although last night I had a dream, and at one point in time I was smoking on this really long Gandalf peace pipe with this group of chanting and dancing people. There was a fire, there was drums. That would be kind of cool, I think.
That would be great. I had a dream last night that Jennifer Aniston was thanking me, but she was Rachel from Friends, thanking me for our time together.
Well, that reminds me that a few nights ago I dreamt of Angelina Jolie, and we were having a conversation about life and stuff, and I was part of her inner circle of counsel.
That's amazing.
Anyway, back to your email.
sorry, Jalcy, we don't have time for your email this week. We went on a bunny trail. I had a dream come true recently thanks to Captain's Pod. I recently started continuing my journey with Discovery after listening to many episodes of Captain's Pod. I was all caught up with Picard and Strange New Worlds, so I decided to give Discovery a second chance, which I think... several people have emailed in and said they've given Discovery a second chance after initially abandoning it. It is one of those shows that was left behind, and I think it's better on a rewatch.
Do you feel like they're mad at us?
I think there'll be a portion of the audience that is mad at us for spending 9 weeks on Discovery, but I'm glad we did it.
Okay.
I stopped watching at the beginning of the third season. That's when they get shunted 1,000 years into the future, so understandable. When I got really confused. Totally fair. Binging it makes it so much easier to understand the story, but the fifth season got complicated, so I wished upon the stars that the Enterprise captain and ambassador could explain more. This is my favourite part. This is so great. Then I saw the podcast about Discovery. However, the episode Janal made me more confused about the trill than ever.
What? No, that cleared some stuff up.
Yeah.
Listen, without that episode, I would have never been able to describe a trill worm to my 7-year-old, who is probably now having nightmares.
Yeah, absolutely. For those that don't know, I tried to explain how the trill work, and it went poorly in
it
our episode
great.
Covering Janal.
It was super duper.
It was great. Come for the explanation, stay for the confusion. I thought I understood the species just fine before. It's still about as entertaining as ever and got me to laugh like a crazy person during my morning walks alone at 4:30 a.m. That's amazing. That's the best time to listen to Captain Spot, slightly unconscious. P.S. Commodore Aaron, I am that new viewer that never watched Lower Decks and really enjoyed the Strange New Worlds Lower Decks crossover, thanks to the podcast. Yay! I've only watched TOS, TNG, Picard, Strange New Worlds, and two seasons of Discovery. Only. You've still just mentioned 400 episodes of Star Trek. I feel like I know the Lower Decks people just from listening to your captain talk about it. That's amazing. Thank you. That was a beautiful email. But genuinely, I'm glad that the show is being entertaining, if not educational, perhaps. Trolls are hard, okay? They're difficult.
They're not. It's a worm that lives in your stomach, but it's not a tapeworm.
That's the easy bit. It's the personality stuff that's hard.
It takes you over, but it doesn't take you over, but it does actually. Mm-hmm. And then there's memories, but there's actually not memories, but sometimes there are.
It's a merger. Like a
as
merger.
We saw in Discovery finale. So clearly, it's a very easy thing to understand.
Yeah, clearly. We don't need to go into it for another podcast. We have one. So thank you for that email, Jowsi. You're the best. Thank you. Slab has sent us an email.
Slab! Bulkhead! Sorry.
I had a question and thought it would be good for the show. Just saw an advert for Cameo and it had me thinking. Cameo is like this celebrity service thing where you can request a specific message or birthday thing, or you can get a celebrity to berate your friends. And there's a whole list of celebrities on Cameo.
Yeah.
Sam's question is, which living Star Trek actor would you most like to wish you a happy birthday over Cameo? I have two answers for this because one of them actually happened.
This took a turn. I thought that this was going to be a, have you guys considered joining Cameo so that we can make you say stuff to ourselves?
Oh, that would be amazing. We will do it. If enough people request it by email, we'll do it.
Imagine being insulted in Bab's voice, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But now it's not about me, so I'm not as interested anymore.
That's fair. What a surprise. What would be your choice, Ambassador? Who from Star Trek would you like to wish you a happy birthday?
Fucking obviously Sir Patrick Stewart.
That'd be a good one.
It has to be the legend at this point.
That'd
and
be
then
incredible.
It probably would be Jason Frakes.
Jonathan Frakes. Yeah, he's not gonna like it if you don't get
Jeffrey
I'm
Frakes.
Jason Frakes. Happy birthday, Danae.
Jordan Frakes.
Jonathan Frakes.
Jelly Bean Frakes.
Jezebel Frakes. Yeah.
I feel like there's one thing that they obviously have a disadvantage, and that is that they don't understand. I regularly either act like I don't know the name on these shows or I genuinely don't. And at first it wasn't even purposeful, but now it's like I just get this nice air.
It's the perfect
of,
cover.
Like, I don't know. But most of the time, I don't know. But anyways, he's Riker. He's not really himself anyway. I think Riker, but then I feel like I'm also really genuinely missing out on engaging with another strong female. So
Nana Visitor, who would be Kira from Deep Space Nine. That would be good. You'd have a good chat with her, I think.
Well, it's not a chat, they just send you audio.
No, that's fair. You can, I think you can buy like a 5-minute conversation.
Okay, well then that changes everything.
Yeah, but that's like $1 billion. Like, that's quite expensive, but you get like a 5-minute chat with them.
But the question wasn't can you afford it, the question is would you do it.
100%. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if it was a, like, maybe I would just, I think Beverly Crusher.
Yeah, Gates McFadden. That'd be amazing.
I think she probably has just a ton of experience in life in general.
Yeah.
And like woman to woman, I would be getting some pretty interesting wisdom, I feel.
Yeah, I think you're right. She'd be a great one.
Yeah.
I actually did get a birthday present. I had John Delancey, who is Q, send me a happy birthday message. I think it was happy birthday. Yeah, no, it was happy birthday. And this was before season 2 of Picard had come out. So I think it was before I even knew he was coming back as Q. So that was really fun. But the other one that would have is Brent Spiner, like Data. Like, because I think he'd be super sassy as well. Like, I think he'd like throw an insulting joke my way too. So that would be my answer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, with that, Ambassador, this is our first experimentation in pulling an episode out of your brain and my brain based on what the mind's eye can see. And we landed on one little ship from Deep Space Nine based on, I broke down what you saw in your mind, which was a blue/purpley portal, Guinan confused by someone's existence, a POV camera angle from a bug. There will be
above.
From above, right?
From above, okay. Like a bug, yep. Flying around. Yeah,
from
yeah,
above,
yeah.
Like a bug. And there will be swatting. And that's how we eventually nailed down one little ship. I'm really excited to be getting back into, like, just grabbing an episode of Star Trek and getting into it. We don't have to worry about predictions, overarching themes. We can just get in and enjoy it.
We could do predictions.
We could. I mean, I think you've just done predictions. Do you want to add any predictions onto what you've seen in your mind's eye now that you know the title of the episode?
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. I do want to add that after the show ended, I was thinking about it, and I wonder if the whole portal part of the beginning of what I saw was actually just me getting into the meditative Star Trek state.
That's just how it opens every time.
And I listened to the music that we made to lead into that segment.
Yes.
So I feel like while that music is going, what's in my head visualizing is that portal, like transporting me into the space.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like next time we do this, I just want to jump in and be even more nebulous about it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And if you said portal again, I wouldn't immediately take us to Deep Space Nine, because that's like quite a low hanging fruit. There's always a wormhole there.
Exactly.
There are other wormholes in Star Trek. I will represent you all. With that, let's head over to the holodeck to watch the episode, and we'll see you all in Quark's bar for a full debrief. Two to beam out. Welcome to The Promenade, the part of the show where we grab a drink from the replicator.
Promenade!
The replomat, and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first, what is your beverage of choice or something from Quark's bar?
I want just like one massive air molecule today. Just one.
A thousand times bigger than one. You can take in.
Yeah. Yeah. I want it, but not in my space, because obviously I don't want to die. I'm not ready for that yet, but I just want it. You know, I can store it somewhere just in case.
Just an emergency one. Just like get a straw. I don't know if the science behind that holds up, but I'd like to think it would. I would like a four-way shunt is what I would like, because I can probably make that out of all of like the extractor tubing that they made for this. This set, but I would like one of those.
Yeah, after watching today's episode, did you want to create your own?
I feel like I could build that entire set.
Yeah, we can.
Which I kind of love.
We could. We should.
I want those huge Isolinia shits. I was about to... Nothing like a good Isolinia shit.
There isn't,
happens if you
really.
Drink too much Ractogino.
Mine always happens after Thai food.
That's fair. Okay, Ambassador, give us a synopsis for this, the poetry that is this episode.
Oh, wow. So in today's episode, we have a textbook shenanigans happening where our crew has been captured, and through the clever art of deception and creating interpersonal drama, we succeed. But this time, with a little help from a tiny little ship.
Just a tiny little ship, little bitty ship.
Which is absolutely the highlight of the episode. I can't imagine how delightful it would be to watch this episode for the first time as it came out. A little ship just zipping around space.
Zoom.
I don't think that they're... Oh. We also learned some information that might have been important to anybody who watches this season, which is that the bad guys have new bad guys and are also obsessed with glue.
Yes.
Chalk.
Ketracel white, but it looks like PVA glue. Yeah.
That could be important to somebody.
It is important in the context of Deep Space Nine. Yeah.
There was no Guinan. There was no 10. There was no 10 forward.
That's a good place to start. How did this fit into your... What
it
you
didn't.
Saw in your... It didn't?
No.
What do you mean it didn't?
No.
The swatting?
No.
You saw the swatting of the
Actually,
ship and the POV of the
I
bug?
I did. No. That part did look and really familiar. Yeah, that was it.
And
that
wasn't
a wormhole. There was an anomaly.
The nebula that they saw
Yeah. I think it fits in. I was kind of trying to be a butt, but no, I think this actually went really well.
Thank you. Good.
This was a fun one, I think, because like at the beginning of this episode, it starts off by saying, we're taking a break from the war to do this one-off little mission.
It's kind of like looking at the camera saying, this is a throwaway bottle episode. Don't worry about it. This is why we aren't knee-deep in like Dominion War at the minute. We're taking a break. It's okay.
And I think that's why I like it, because it does give me enough context clues that there's mm-hmm. some other really serious stuff going on in this show.
Yes.
So if
for
I
sure.
was to say, hey, a friend of yours wants to watch some random episode from Deep Space Nine, this could be a great one to introduce them to, because not only does it have, you know, a little adventure to follow and do some quirky stuff, you know, shrinking yeah. down and things like that, but also it kind of gives you these hints about the greater enemy and leads to potentially some more interesting stuff. And it ends with an understanding that there's more people on the show than just four.
Yeah, you're right. It's actually a pretty solid introduction to like the to Deep Space Nine without getting too deep into the Dominion War arc, because in season six we are deep into this season-long kind of war with the Dominion and all this upheaval and stuff. So it's kind of clever that it manages to be a bottle episode while also having some integral stuff in it, because this is the introduction of the Alpha Jem'Hadar, who are the new breed that have been specifically raised in the Alpha Quadrant to fight in this war, rather than going to the Gamma Quadrant, breeding them there and getting them through the wormhole, because Deep Space Nine, funnily enough, keeps blockading the wormhole.
Why wouldn't
and
you?
Stopping the troops from coming in. So these Jem'Hadar are bred in the Alpha Quadrant with some subtle differences. So there's some really important bombshells that come up in this episode. It's not just a throwaway, have some fun with Honey, I Shrunk the Shuttlecraft.
It also, it feels like it's introducing a reason as to why this new breeding is going to lead to their downfall, because they don't yeah. think like the OG bad guys. You know, you've got this interesting fight between the alphas and the gammas, and
yeah.
the elder and the first is kind of like these two characters. And in this episode, the elder is 100% right at every single turn and ends up mm-hmm. dying. And his great end to his life is knowing that he was right, but not getting any props for it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a clever way for Deep Space Nine to introduce a reason why this formidable foe is suddenly have a crack in their foundation. And they do that through them taking over the ship, and then also to this like fun beat of, all right, how are we going to take this back over? And the big one for this is that they need to, the little ship has to get into a little place to plug some stuff in so that the codes are rerouted, because Nog isn't going to get there in time.
And basically, yeah.
I don't understand why that works, but watching them huff and puff their way through a teeny tiny landscape inside of something was really funny. I really enjoyed that particular scene.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
I didn't mind it.
There's so much that I love about this episode and that we should talk about. Before we get into all of the shrinking stuff, I don't know if it'll be super helpful, but it's nice to share it while we're on the topic. The Jem'Hadar are, like, the ones in the Gamma Quadrant are specifically bred to be obedient puppies that fight people. They're addicted to Ketracel White, which is that liquid stuff.
What does it do?
So it basically keeps them alive.
Reason to be addicted to something.
Well, I think they eventually find out that they can live without it. So it's a drug that's given to the Jem'Hadar to make them subservient and keep them.
Ooh.
Like, hey, you got to follow your orders or else you won't get your supply of Ketracel White.
Oh, is that from the guy that was on screen at the beginning?
The Vorta. Like, the little... Exactly, yeah.
The Hua?
The Vorta. The Vorta. Yeah.
And for those of us who speak American English, is that V-O-R-T-A?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Vorta.
Okay. Vorta.
The Vorta.
So you're saying water.
Water, yeah.
the Vorta.
Vorta. Oh, no. The Vorta. So, yeah, the Vorta work for the Founders, who are a bunch of changelings, and they made the Jem'Hadar to be there. To be their subservient slaves that go off and do all of the fighting. They also only live, I think it's like 6 to 10 years. Like, they have a tiny, tiny lifespan.
Oh, that's so sad.
Which is why he's being retired, because he's getting old.
Because he's three.
Because he's like three and he's getting on a bit in years.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, they come out of their shell, they mature really quickly, and then they die after like 6 to 7 years.
So this is essentially just an army for someone else.
Literally just an army from the Dominion. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, foot soldiers.
It sparks some curiosities for me about the world at large that maybe you'll know. So is it that they were already an alien species that liked to dominate, take over, and take over a planet and keep kind of like slowly taking over as they expand? Or is it that somebody found them and realized that they were good warriors and then got them addicted to this this drug and then started using them?
No, as far from what I can remember, they were literally genetically engineered from the ground up to be like to be this race of soldiers for them. So the Dominion are like kind of dominant in the Gamma Quadrant, and when the wormhole links the Alpha Quadrant to the Gamma Quadrant, we start trading and interacting with people in the Gamma Quadrant, and they're like, oh hey, be careful of the Dominion. And the Dominion eventually are like, oh hey, we're going to come through this wormhole and dominate your quadrant as well. And the Jem'Hadar are their soldiers that they bred.
So the Dominion isn't just the species.
No, the Dominion is like alliance.
A group of people.
Exactly. Okay, the Dominion are the founders, which is Odo's people, the changelings. But Odo doesn't know that to begin with. So there's a race of changelings that are basically viewed as gods. And then the Vorta work for them. And I think the Vorta are genetically engineered as well, but they're more intelligent.
Okay.
And then the Jem'Hadar are just the grunt work that go.
Wow.
And collectively they're the Dominion.
Who wouldn't think that a changeling would be a god? If I met a changeling that could just, you know, shift in front of me, that would be pretty...
And to the Vorta, they quite literally are, because the changelings created the Vorta. So if your creator isn't your god, I don't know kind of like what else would be.
Okay. I think I'm following all right now. But that's a good sign of this episode, that I didn't really need to understand all of that to pick up on the nuance. Like, you saw that the lizard people were reporting to the guy with the Google lens.
Yes, it is. It is a Google lens.
It is. It is. Star Trek inspired Google. Let it be known.
Star Trek abandoned it just as quickly as Google did as well.
They did, yeah. Okay, cool.
So yeah, that's just like a little backstory about the Jem'Hadar. But I think this episode does a great job of kind of giving... It gives you plenty of context. It gives you enough of what you need to get through this episode, I think.
And at the very end, they give you the shot of back on the space station that I've seen before. Like, again, which kind of draws you back into the greater world. Because this episode has very few characters in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's really small. But it does have some really fun prosthetic work. Like, I was super excited about that part.
Oh, tell me about it. Tell me what you loved. What tweaked you?
I loved it. They have these interesting, like, head pieces.
Yeah.
And the blending was really nice. And I know that we have to have, like... You know, two eyes and a mouth, because that's just where we're humans.
That's
how we work. Humans acting as aliens.
It's a human TV show. Yeah.
But I thought that they looked really unique, and each one sort of had different ridges. There was one person that sort of started talking about an idea he had, and he was like given
it has different colored spikes.
Yeah, almost just like a different pattern. And but I also love that we were able to continue to see them express not only with just like their mouths, but you could see that their eyes were able to open up, you know, wide. When they lifted, the actor would lift their eyebrows. The prosthetic moved really, really well. And they had this kind of like thing that went into their neck. Was that the drug?
That's the Ketracel white being
Jesus
pumped into
Christ,
their body. Yeah, it's just,
that is
it's
dark.
In neck. It's so dark. It's
just
rip that thing off and they go into a panic like Worf often does. Or Worf just snap a guy's neck.
Yeah,
you didn't see that in TNG too much.
Nope.
Worf is snapping necks everywhere in Deep Space Nine.
Does
he
really?
Love it. All the time. All the damn time. And in First Contact, he's just snapping Borg necks everywhere.
Man. I mean, good for you, I guess. If you have that kind of physical strength, you just use your physical strength. I would be Kira, just shooting shit, I guess.
Heck yeah. This is one of the biggest highlights from this era of Star Trek for me, is the prosthetics and how much expression you get out of the masks, out of every alien that you see, more so than kind of any show that I see nowadays. No, I'm so old. But it's just how expressive everyone manages to be. And that's just a testament to the prosthetic work and the actors that get behind it. The fun thing about these Jem'Hadar is that the Gamma One has a different facial structure than the Alpha one. So he has like this bony kind of strip that goes along his head, and the Alpha Quadrant ones don't have that. They've been modified to look a bit different. So it makes it easier for us to understand who is who as well and who's going to have these different characteristics. So it's really clever.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And I was really, really invested in like watching it. Their uniforms, because, you know, it's not a surprise given if you're listening to this podcast as we watch these shows, the newer shows coming off of Discovery and then watching this one, there's so much more detail that we have. There's so much more CGI that we have. And so, again, just like anytime we switch into a different, you know, outlet for Star Trek, in these different eras, there's going to be differences in what they're showing. So the costuming is simplified in a way, like it's not as regal looking, and it stands out so much in juxtaposition to last week's episode. And
oh, do you mean like the Starfleet uniforms?
Starfleet uniforms just lack a little bit of that pizzazz or that, I don't know. I don't want to say pride in itself, but it's just like, we just need a uniform. So they're just wearing a uniform.
Well, what's interesting about this uniform is that it's deliberately toned down because they're at war. So they don't.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They
haven't
deliberately said this in the show, but like I can't remember where I read this, but collectively it's kind of understood that they went for these muted tones and the purple to blend in more on the battlefield.
That makes sense.
So when they're on away missions and stuff, they're not just this bright red and blue target. It's like, come and get me, red shirts. So yeah, but you're right. It's very jarring compared to Discovery, which is like primary colors everywhere.
Well, and it's not just the coloring. So, like on Discovery, even like the away mission or something, they're texturing differently in their costuming now, where it might be an undershirt and then it might be like a leather bit, but it's also mixed with another textile that gives it some dimension so that when the light hits it, your eye is seeing that maybe it's a muted color, but there's dimension. And all of a sudden, it's just a wool shirt.
Yeah.
You know, and so my eye isn't looking at that anymore. My eye is going, okay, well, what else am I meant to appreciate about this space? Like what was the show bragging about? And I think the show is bragging about their sets of 100%. All of these panels that have all these interesting buttons on them.
How fun was that? How fun was like everything from going through the exhaust vent where the impulse engines were firing up, then through the actually just flying through the ship and then into the control panel with the Isolinear chips everywhere. Was that fun? Were you rolling your eyes a bit because it's quite clearly a set, or were you just like on board for it and enjoying the novelty?
Well, it's kind of like two parts because so when Sisko is talking, a lot of the episode was in the warp core room, the engine room.
Engineering.
And so I'm not looking at their costuming, and once I had like unfocused from all the prosthetics, it was a really cool set. Just that set itself, it's kind of a two-part question. I did enjoy the shuttle stuff, and I want to get to that because it was such an intricate part of this episode. That is the main character of the episode. This episode is the tiny little shuttle.
Yes,
we have to talk about it. But the set of the engine room and engineering, that's, I feel like, what the creators of this episode or maybe this particular show or the Defiant itself we're really, really proud of. I mean, obviously we've got acting going on and we've got, you know, dialogue that people are writing, and those are important parts too. But the set, there was this interesting moment where like there's so much going on in this one space. You've got bad guys at panels booping buttons, and you've got good guys that are walking around with their own independent missions. Each person's doing something different. And then you have the shuttle that's looking in on it, and you're still trying to figure out where you are in the room. And they did a really good job, I feel, of giving us an understanding
of where everyone is and what they're doing. Yeah.
There's this one particular moment, though, when Sisko is scanning almost like a cylinder style device that it kind of slid out of the wall.
Yeah.
And it had all of these strips of color on like a clear like chips or something. It wasn't like the isolinear chips that I'm used to seeing on TNG, but
yeah.
And I just sort of like honed in on it because that's the stuff I feel like the show wants to get excited about, is that their props department made some badass stuff to play with.
Uh-huh.
And we got to see it. There was an kits. There was all this. They're pulling out these different devices, like while they're fixing things.
Yeah, is landing next to these cool little gadgets as well. Like, I just want to play. I want to play in engineering, just like, boop, 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 like with my sticks that have got flashing lights. But and this all feels so very Star Trek. And like the Defiant was introduced because. It was introduced in like season four or five, somewhere around there, because A, they needed to be mobile. They needed to get people off of Deep Space Nine to like kind of add some variety. But it also, there wasn't a lot of Starfleet in Deep Space Nine. And the Defiant is like a breath of fresh air. It's like, oh, this feels like Voyager. This feels like the Enterprise. Yeah, like this feels small. Like a set that I'm comfortable
really
with.
Small.
Just a smaller version of it.
Right?
Yeah.
Because the Defiant is small, right?
So the Defiant is actually bigger than you think. It's not like Voyager size, but it is. It's bigger than, it's like obviously a lot bigger than a runabout. It's bigger than a shuttle. It's, I'm trying to think of a size. It's probably the size of the original series Enterprise saucer section.
Okay.
It's probably the comparison. So it's
I don't know. It felt real small. They kept being like, and this is maybe a sin for later, but they kept being like, oh, we're going to kill all your crew. And like all three of them.
Yeah,
ooh.
There is a crew of like 10 on there. It doesn't need many people to man it, but it's meant to be a warship. Like it was deliberate. It wasn't built for exploration. It was the first like kind of Starfleet ship that was built for war and battle,
interesting.
Which is why it's so different and can be manned with less people.
Yeah, well, I was, you're right, though. There was a familiarity to it that I was really, drawn into. But that's what I was really enjoying about those moments is, okay, their costuming isn't distracting me. Their lingo isn't distracting me. I am able to, look at what else is on the screen. And there was so much to look at.
So much.
And then let's go to the shuttle.
Yes.
Because that was really fun. How did you feel when you saw this the first time? Do you remember?
I remember it because I was doing a watch through. I'd watched bits and pieces of Deep Space Nine after school, but the first time I did a watch through start to finish was when I was like 21, 22, something like that. And then I did another watch through with my dad when I was like 27-ish. And this one just tickles me. I just think it's done so, so well. Because sometimes you can be like, oh, the throwaway episode there. You can tell from the humor, the score, everything. You can be like, oh, this one doesn't really matter. But this one, it's just got a special place in my heart. It's so, so fun because this is something I've never seen Star Trek do before. So this was a script that was by Renea Chaveria. I can never say their name right. But it was meant to be for Next Generation, but they never found a way that made sense to do it. And just imagine like waiting through the Next Generation and then into season 6 of Deep Space Nine, and they're finally like,
we get to do
okay, you can do the shrinking ship story. This is how it makes sense. And it's so fun. I think that little ship is adorable when it its little boop on the keypad to get into the bridge. That is just buried in my brain as just this little like, okay, and thrusters, boop. And it's such a great, I think the way the runabout uses its environment around the ship is so great. And the amount that they get to pull off is so impressive to me. And it was the episode was nominated for an Emmy for Outstanding Visual Effects. It didn't win. It absolutely should have won because I feel like the runabout is flying around this ship, is doing the booping, is interacting with its area in a way where they could have cut corners so much. We could have stuck to more internal shots. We could have done a lot of CGI, but they actually built a miniature version of the runabout. So you've got the regular runabout models. Then they built one that was even smaller so that you could work with it. It's not exactly to scale, but that's fine. But it's physically there. That ship is physically there flying about the ship. And it makes me so happy. It's so well done.
How badly do you want the people who make the ships to make an actual mini one?
This is it. I just want them to make all of the ships for me to purchase. Like the people that made the OG ships. And I wish we would do this with modern shows.
For you to buy. So like you have the Defiant and then you can buy the one that just fits on the end of a toothpick.
Oh man, if it was all to scale, they are just flying around, flies in it. I would love that so much. But physical models are so different.
I agree.
They hit differently.
They do. And that's one of the behind the scenes stuff with Lord of the Rings that I love so much is like watching all the models that they built and they're shooting it, and it just looks so good. You know, yeah. It's now you did say CGI, but I feel that at this time CGI really wasn't something to think it's about building. Screens. I feel like it would have looked distracting, and how it was able to fly around the space was really fun.
I'm baffled. It's so it's like it's literally like it's on a stick. That's on a stick, and they're booping the comp panel. It's so great,
and it makes it. That's what I feel like it would have been like to watch it for the first time. For me, watching it now, was this my most favorite episode of Star Trek? Like, no, it wasn't. Like, it drew me in, but it was a great episode. Yeah. It wasn't angry with it or anything. But I think I kept trying to go back. Like, what would this be like watching it? And the delight of watching this little ship zip around.
It is delightful.
It was like I tapped into the ether and could like hear all of the delightful giggles of people watching this for the first time, just kind of like hide and seeking around the ship. And
well, it could have been goofy. It could have been like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. It could have been done a little bit poorly, but I think that there's a couple of things they did that really counteracted that for me. And it's at the beginning of the episode, they know this is going to happen. And
yes.
Kira is in on the joke, and they're just like, you do know this is ridiculous. We are shrinking people. And it's all part of the anomaly. It's not like there's an episode of TNG where they get the transporter turns them into children, and that was a surprise. This isn't a shock. We know that they're going to be shrunk down. This is for science, and we have to have a straight face because it's for science. And Kira is there being us, saying, guys, this is ridiculous. So what the hell are we doing? This is so dumb.
Yeah.
And that does a lot of work for me because you can roll your eyes and just be like, oh, space anomaly turns them really small, but we know it's going to happen. And the other thing they do is just how they, like we said, is how they interact with the sets. They built the sets to walk around. How that little ship zipping around at the end and zapping people, firing torpedoes.
That was so fun.
There's a firefight with a ship inside engineering.
They fire
That's
phasers
so great.
At a giant.
It's incredible. Fire it's torpedoes fun. At the giant, literal giant. Like, it's, you could have gone to a planet and it's like, oh, everyone on this planet is so tall. So the ship looks small, but I think they executed this so, so great.
I do too. But I'm glad that you mentioned the humor playing a part in this episode, because I noticed it at the very beginning, you know, it's almost a little bit forced, but
the dynamic is a little bit jarring. Yeah.
The dynamic of this crew is something that I'm missing. Like I did feel like I was kind of missing the inside joke. Like I understand that they're laughing about shrinking, and maybe it's just a whole bunch of dick jokes, you know.
Well,
but
I think it's like Nog is small. Nog is a Ferengi and Nog is tiny. So I think that's what he was getting at was, I don't see the issue with being small.
Yeah. But it's almost just like, oh, you're not tall. And that's like the whole inside joke is short men aren't the same as tall men or something. And
there's
a little bit of that
90s stuff, like Friends coming into it. Yeah, huh? No,
yeah,
I'm with
like
you.
You're not quite the coolest unless you look like this. And
gotta be 6 foot two.
So I kind of was like, is that what they're really like laughing about? Because I wasn't in on the joke. But then I also just felt like this crew of people are dynamically different than the other shows that I've been watching. There seems to be a lot of history. Like they're casual with Sisko. Like they're on the Defiant and he's just like ribbing it up and they're not like, yes, Captain. You know, it's not this super serious thing. Like serious things begin to happen and they hop to it or whatever. But the vibe was kind of like just inside jokey feeling. And that set me outside of the crew, but it didn't make me feel like I didn't want to watch it because it was just an interesting fact. But humor was a part of this one. It even ends on humor with Odo and Quark kind of like ribbing these two characters so that they have to go check to make sure that they're the same size. And if height is an issue, just make yourself taller. Like, I don't know.
It's the 24th century. I'm sure there's ways to do it. Just wear some big shoes. But I said this to you at the end of the episode. I love the rare moments where Odo and Quark do a team up because they are adversarial. They're not enemies, but Odo is out to catch... it's Tom and Jerry. Odo is out to catch the mouse, and he rarely actually gets one up on Quark. So it's really fun to see them gang up on Miles, on O'Brien and Bashir together and have their little chuckle. It's so fun.
Yeah, it was fun. I think overall this was a really fun episode. What were some other standout moments for you that you want to talk about?
Well, I'm going to head back into just my nerdery, which is, this is the most detailed look we get of being inside the guts of the Defiant and a Starfleet ship. So when they fly in through the exhaust port and suddenly they realize the impulse engines are being brought up and they're going to be vaporized by plasma, this is the first time I've ever seen the engine starting up from the inside. So it's, for me, it's just fun to see that process of the lights going shum, 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 the lights coming on, the superheated plasma coming through, the ship doing its thing. Like, I'm glad it took so long to load up because they would have been vaporized. But I love going in and out and seeing the guts of the ship. That was really, really fun for me.
It was fun. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah. Because we just, you asked about like the small ship and like what it was like to go and see the insides of the ship. I thought that that was really delightful.
What about you,
Ambassador?
Obviously
don't know where we were in the ship, you know, like contextually.
Yeah, that's fair. Neither did I
was like, we're in a port, and then all of a sudden it like kicks out and we see him fly out of like
this weird exhaust,
like a little
port.
Vent,
yeah,
on the bottom,
flappy bit. The luckily is flappy and not like a solid wall.
But why is it flappy if it's got really dangerous shit in there?
Reasons.
Right. Anyway,
there's no need for that.
Okay. That's obviously completely a sin that I'll forget about when we get the sin section. So I'll just slide it in there now. But I liked how the little ship was hiding behind some pipes, and then it was hiding behind the toolbox, and then it was like shooting people.
Oh, it's so adorable, isn't it? And like when something gets picked up in front of it, it's like, it's almost like spinning its wheels, just like I gotta go.
Kind of reminds me of Johnny Five. Did you ever see?
No.
Did you ever see? Oh, what was that movie? Number Five is Alive. I can't remember the name of that movie.
I don't know. Somebody will have it. Short Circuit?
Yes, Short Circuit.
Pulled that from my brain. Definitely not from the live chat.
There's a robot character in that movie. And he just, that and some of the other like little robots that I remember seeing when I was little, it kind of had that little vibe, like it had its own little personality in that moment. Now I know it's being driven around by Dax, but because of how that was flying around and moving, it's almost like the shuttle was its own character.
Yes, they did a great job of that.
And that was really fun. But for me, the highlight of the shrinking moments was absolutely when Chief O'Brien and Sassy Doctor were in like the big playland of circuitry.
Yes.
That was really funny to me. Like, or even the scene leading up to it where they're like, we're going to beam in. And the doctor's like, you're not going to live because the molecules are massive.
And he's like, yay, I don't have to go. Oh, I have a plan for that. Shit, I have to go.
He goes, well, that solves that. You know, and it's just this, the casual way that he delivers his lines and the way that they kind
he's
of
great.
Just barb back and forth was, it just feels like a real friendship. It feels like a real long-standing working relationship where you're technically trying to problem solve. And what I also
really
like
does.
About it is you have these characters that like, yeah, they're going to put their life on the line because, you know, this is serious stuff and they're going to do what they have to do because this is a serious moment. It's going to take them a minute to get there and they're going to use some humor and they're going to have some time to barb back and forth. But also we get to see them do the hard work and go in and do it.
Yes.
And I like that. I like that they showed us suffering through this
there's
got to
be some stakes in there. Yeah, exactly.
And we kind of got to see it. And I don't know, it's just fun to see a props department go, let's have some fun,
let's
guys.
Go. We're going to have some fun and we're going to build some stuff. Like, it's not often you're going to get to do that. It'll only be used once. I've never seen any part of that miniature set get used again. And now that I looked
so
closely, I was like, man, you could recycle every single part of that set because they don't build a lot, but I'm just glad they build it at all because you could write that scene out of it and just find another way to do this. But they really committed to, this is the only chance we're going to get to see Tiny O'Brien and Tiny Bashir inside a console.
I mean, that was super funny. And those like long tubes, when they came out, they even put
the ducting.
Yeah, but it wasn't just, this is where the props department impresses me all the time, but it wasn't just a piece of metal. They actually put little rectangular panels that also lit up on the connecting bits that I thought was really clever. But I just think that set would be a really fun thing to see. Imagine walking into work that day.
I would love that. It's like everyone must have just been overjoyed because these are Isolinear chips that we recognize and you're seeing like 12-foot versions of them. I would have loved to walk around that set. I think it's really, really, really cleverly done.
Yeah, I also liked whenever he finally gets the conduit like up into the ceiling. Yeah. And it's just such a great humor beat to kind of the relief that they feel. And then it just kind of like falls out.
Just falls down. I was like, do it again.
And O'Brien isn't going to go help. He's just like waves his hand like, get to it, buddy.
Because at this point, they know that Bashir has been genetically engineered by his parents as well. They did some interfering that was illegal with his genes that made him super intelligent and increased strength and like reflexes.
Is that like the same thing that happened with number two on Strange New Worlds?
It's similar. It's actually,
what's the name of that?
It's a very similar
race.
Program. Wait.
It wasn't a race, like, but they were like,
yes, it's the same. Yeah, it's a different species. It's not, it's
different,
it's,
species.
It's the same ruling, like it's the same law that prevented that genetic meddling from happening, but they're not the same, not exactly the same thing.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, chat. Illyrians, that's
it. Illyrians, that's
the one.
Thank
you, Wondering.
But yeah, Bashir has just been, he's a human that's been meddled with so that he could get ahead and do better. And he doesn't find out about it until like season 4 or 5.
But he's not Illyrian.
He's not Illyrian.
Okay, no. Okay. That'd be interesting.
But good memory. Good
memory. I wonder why they chose not to do Illyrian. Why do you think that they would choose not to bring in the Illyrian?
I think they hadn't invented it by Deep Space Nine.
What?
Well, Strange New Worlds comes before Deep Space Nine, but it's obviously been written afterwards.
So they made that up for Strange New Worlds?
Oh,
that
man,
wasn't...
you're asking me stuff now. No, I don't...
I'm asking you stuff!
No, that's fair, that's fair. I can't remember off the top of my head. Check back next week for Ian Gets Fact-Checked.
Yeah, send in your knowledge, because we can do like a little knowledge moment at the start of next week's episode.
Yeah. Something about Illyrians. I'll do some Googling. But yeah, it's not the same thing in Deep Space Nine. I know that.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, super interesting. Not a popular choice because they kind of... It was kind of like, oh, we need a Lieutenant Commander Data on this show. So he suddenly had like the ability to do quick math. And it was a little bit eye-rolly. And the actor that played Bashir was like, I was interesting enough. Why did they have to retcon my character in season 5?
I mean, is it, I don't know, I didn't watch it, so I didn't experience like how much finagling that they did with the character, but it does make sense because a character like a Data in a world like this where you're in space having to make quick decisions that are going to save everybody's life or you're going to blow up in the middle of nowhere, you need to have some superpowers going on, either in the form of a computer person, and if they're not trying to reinvent Data, why not take a character and give them a little bit of a boost? So
yeah,
choosing to go with I was altered in the womb instead of like I had a there was an accident when I was beamed in, that's interesting though, you know, like something that can't be undone due to some, you know, like there's lots of ways to infuse superpowers with a character. It's interesting to give it to the Doctor. That's an interesting choice.
Yeah, it is, because he's not necessarily going to use the strength, but it definitely helps when he, when they're on like some mission and they're abandoned on a planet and he has to like use his super brain to do stuff. But yeah, it wasn't a popular choice with the fans.
Yeah, that happens sometimes.
This is the question I always ask with Deep Space Nine. You got to see a little bit more of Jadzia this episode. How are you feeling about your daughter's favorite character?
Thank you for reminding everyone that this is my daughter's favorite character. It's not just her favorite character. It's, if she was going to play a character, this is the one that she would play because she saw her scanning the Tribbles to see if there were bombs.
Yeah, she was saving the Tribbles.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's weird. It's not that I don't like her. It's, I guess I have. I am like the mother-in-law.
Of Worf.
That no one is good enough for my Worf. Does that make sense?
It's like, and Worf, it's... your wife is here. And she's so tiny. She's in the little ship. I wanted Worf to like pet the ship. It's a great moment.
When
it's
she's
hilarious.
Like blowing kisses through the screen. And, and you can kind of see it because it's so tiny, but
it's,
you can still
so
see her
well
doing
done.
It.
You,
it's so cute.
I love that moment.
You know, so there's the character Dax, and then there's like how she interacts with Worf. This is my favorite episode that I've seen of her so far, because she obviously has more of a purpose than being a brat. So
fair.
I saw her pilot a ship and fire phasers and take command, and I saw her get hurt and recover from that and know her crew and zoom in on the monitor, figure out a situation. I mean, obviously I got to see this like part of her that I really, the problem solving puzzle person.
Yeah.
But then she also has this very childlike like strength to her silliness.
Yeah, she does.
And that I really love because I'm very similar to that. So she's in a life or death situation and she's cracking jokes and she's smiling and waving. Like she doesn't even know how she's going to get big yet.
Yeah. Is this going to work? Am I going to get back?
And she's like, hey, you know, so hi. I kind of love that sort of chaotic nature.
She is chaos.
My favorite moment was probably the end when Worf teases her and doesn't actually have a line of the poem. And he shows this part of himself I've never seen before. And I was like, look at Worf.
He's playing.
And I haven't seen that. I mean, I will watch him snap next all day. Like, I love that. Yeah. Like, go kick some ass, Worf. I love it when he gets irritated and he's like stomping around going, I should have known better. That's the Worf I know. But this, like,
beating himself up.
It wasn't even that he was tender. It was that he was playful with her. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, now I see it. So now I feel like the mother-in-law that's like, no, okay. It's been 7 years. You've been married for a long time now. I'm finally coming on board or whatever. But
yeah.
I liked this episode with Judzia. I thought she was really fun to watch this one. Yeah. I don't think that she was like the main character I was drawn to.
No.
Can I tell you who annoyed me?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm super nervous because I know people love the show, but
don't say Cisco.
It was Cisco.
What?
He annoyed the fuck out of me.
Why did he annoy you this episode? We gotta take the show off the air.
No, we don't.
We're gonna do this in private, and then I'll edit down something that works.
No.
I'm intrigued.
There's a couple of moments, like, I know that the show is saying, like, do this. I know the director is saying, do this, right? So this isn't an acting choice or anything. It's just the character that I'm looking at. I think he's a bit reckless in a couple of scenes, and I don't quite know why that annoyed me. There's this one particular scene that just is stuck in my mind, and it's when he's taken individually to the bridge, and he's being told that he needs to fix the warp core. And so he begins to kind of negotiate for his crew to help and observe this. And he puts his hands kind of behind his back, like he's just sort of like walking around in this super ego confident moment.
Mm-hmm. And he's projecting confidence. Yeah.
And I'm like, he's walking freely in between them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just seemed really stupid.
I think I have the same issue, actually, but I don't aim it at Cisco. I aim it at, like, the writers for this one, because Cisco's plan, I think what bugs me about it is that Cisco's plan really shouldn't work. The Jem'Hadar should absolutely be killing prisoners. Previously, we've seen them be brutal. The whole point is that the Jem'Hadar are, like, really brutal. Like, they don't take prisoners. So in order for this whimsical episode to work, you've got to find a way to break their characteristics and what they do. And part of that is, though, these alphas act differently. So, and the Cisco's plan shouldn't, and the confidence that he delivers it with, shouldn't work. I never feel like Cisco is in any danger. I don't even feel like Cisco is scared. Right. I don't even feel like any of the crew are scared.
And I think that's why, character-wise,
that feels weird.
The tension that I feel, I think I should be feeling, I don't feel, because Cisco is so detached from this being a big deal.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I don't like Cisco this episode. And I don't know if it's because he should have been more serious. There are a couple of moments when he does get serious, and it's when he's talking about killing everyone.
I love it.
No, it's when he was whispering for me.
Oh,
like,
interesting.
When he was kind of talking one-on-one with his crew. When he was getting his big booming voice, I almost liked him even less.
Oh, interesting.
It was weird. I don't have a lot of experience with Cisco. Yeah. I rarely hear his voice. Like, this is not an introduction that I'm used to feeling.
All of the episodes we've done haven't been Cisco heavy.
The way he delivers his lines and things, it has a cadence to it that I'm not used to. And so I'm missing some nuance, and I understand that. That's why I'm nervous about saying I didn't like Cisco, but
no, you're good.
There could have been no Cisco this episode, and I think it would have been better.
It didn't need him to command this mission. But I think that's what I was picking up on as well, was just the lack of seriousness. And this is the problem when you do a whimsical episode like this that's also intertwining the big bad of the season.
Yeah.
It's hard to not belittle the big bad, because all of the alphas looked stupid, and even the gamma looks stupid and stripped of any kind of weight. We should be more scared of the Jem'Hadar than we are in this episode.
I felt that I was supposed to be intimidated, but the way that the the Deep Space Nine characters were interacting with them did not feel, it felt like they knew they were stupid.
Yes.
It felt like they knew that they
We've got the upper hand.
Yeah, and they didn't. And they shouldn't have.
They absolutely shouldn't.
But the moment that I took him the most serious is when he kind of would drop down to a whisper, and when he told Nog that he was going to be blowing the ship up, oh, that's his plan.
I'll blow it up.
The other thing we have going on here is that Jadzia is the one who tells us their plan. And it was a clever scene as well. Where
yeah, I like that.
We have like the bird's eye nest view, and they're showing the characters, and they're telling us what they're doing so that they don't have to talk about it in the room, which would have absolutely been a sin talking about it in the room.
It really would.
But yes. At the same time, they managed to talk about it in the room because they're all on the same page. And so they have their little missions, and they're walking around, they're doing their things. And I loved knowing that that's what they were doing. But when we came down into it and he was giving information, that's when I believed the seriousness of it. But when he was like doing his bravado, it felt like, why would you be risking everything if you know that these people would usually behead you? Like there are some episodes we've watched where our crew has been captured. The one that I'm thinking of is when they get to escape. It's the one where when they beam out, they're naked with the Ferengi and Deanna's mom.
Oh, Menage a Troy.
Yeah. So when we watched that one and they like outsmart the Ferengi because of a saying, Riker, I'm going to beat you at chess.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't see the board from over here. Please let me out.
This was the better version of that. So
yes.
I'm not saying it was bad, but I'm saying like there was just something about how it was being acted. Like they were having so much fun almost that I didn't really get that we were actually in danger. It was just a fun episode, which is great. I love fun episodes.
No, I'm with you. Like what's interesting is that you've picked up on something that in theory should be more jarring in the context of knowing what's happening this season. So it's something that I probably when I was watching it in order, I did pick up on. If we're doing one of like, because we're at war with the Dominion, if we do this episode and it's like a serious, we know this is going to be like an episode about the Dominion War, and the Defiant gets captured and the crew are locked up and the Defiant is like an important ship in this war, I'm scared. Like, the Defiant is a big deal. Like, if the Defiant gets captured, that's a lot of important technology. And it's a big deal because they are, like, it's in so many battles and it's there, like, they're so proud of that ship. And this happens within the first few minutes and it's like, oh, they caught it. Oh, shit. And yet I didn't feel any of that. I didn't feel any of the oh, shit that the Jem'Hadar are all over this ship.
It was a fun episode on top of a serious moment. And that's okay. But it just... And maybe they purposefully did this to take this inflated bad guy and make them more into that we can defeat them because they're stupid.
It's just the wrong time to do it because we're like mid-season. For me, it feels like it.
I guess I don't know what happens next, but if at this point in their storytelling, the bad guy begins to be more defeated, then this episode kind of does what it needs to do. It lets the air out of the tire and the audience begins to no longer believe that this is the, you know, really, really hard enemy to face. But Cisco was the one that should have been showing a little bit more reserve, but maybe I missed something. And it's that scene in that bridge that I just didn't like, but maybe he was just doing bravado to them and to his crew. He did have seriousness, I guess, in the jail scene too, like when they were kind of all together, but...
That's the way that I took it, was that he's projecting bravado and confidence because he doesn't want to show weakness. And I think the forgiveness I would give is that they're also like they are at war. So maybe they've been at war for a little while and they're all kind of like prepared to die. A little bit, nobody wants to die, but they're all kind of like they've been going under some more intense campaigns and this isn't a surprise. Like they are in it. Like they are in deep with the Dominion right now.
Yeah. I think I kind of talked myself around on that one. I think it's okay.
I like that.
He bugged me a bit.
I like talking about it, but I get it.
Part of the show. Part of the show is that we're not seeing it all in order.
Yeah. But no, I think you've picked up on something. I think there is the threat that should be there with the... Like, if this was just a random alien species that was like, oh, look, we're going to take advantage of that ship and grab it, I might give it a pass. But the Jem'Hadar taking the ship should be terrifying. That should be like the Borg jumping on and taking the ship.
I do want to say one more thing before we go on, and maybe this is actually a sin, but maybe it's not. It might be a transition into the sins part. Are you ready to go into the sins next?
I was just going to pip it first, and then we're ready for some sins. So okay. How many pips out of 4 or 5? I don't know what we do anymore.
I think it's like 2.
Oh.
Are you okay?
I'm okay. No, it's 2.5 pips from me. Like, the novelty of it gets it up there. It's not the best episode, but it's so much. I have so much fun with it. And it's one that I would throw on in the background of, I've got 45 minutes while I'm doing something else. I would have this on because visually, it's nice to look over and to see the fun stuff happening on screen.
2.5 is fine. Yeah, 2.5. Okay. But there are no halves, people. So it's either 2 or 3.
I know. I'll go, that's harsh.
Mm-hmm.
Halves are important. And I know this was my rule. I'm going to go 3 pips because it should have won the Emmy.
It was Yeah, 3 pips for sure.
I'm giving it 3 in compensation for not winning an Emmy.
I just came off of like feeling negative about some of the stuff that this is a 3 pipper. And because of the set, it's so fun to look at.
It is.
It really was. It really was. But can we sin it now?
Let's do it. Let's go and do some sins. Battle stations, everyone. Red alert.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our tough little ships. It's you first. Go for it.
Can we talk about pockets? Can we talk about massive please. Pockets on the side of our legs, just what? Right down on that thigh level? Like,
really?
I can't tell if they're like the best addition to the bad guy uniform.
Oh, the bad guy uniform. I missed this completely.
Or if it's like just... You know what? We want them to seem more like prepared for battle. And how do we show that? Just a huge envelope just right on the thigh. And I can't tell if I love it. But now that you didn't see it, you have nothing to say about it.
I don't have anything to add, but I believe you. And you are the costume person. So if you think it's impractical, I believe you. We'll sin it.
I just want to know what's in there.
Guns.
What's in the thigh pocket?
Guns. A little notebook, little diary. Everyone has a little diary, dear diary. Today,
I guess there are just some things that once they're invented, there is just no improving. And the envelope pocket is one of them, you know?
Yeah. It's an important question. I'm glad we're... Yeah. Mm-hmm. I now want to go back, rewatch the episode and check the pockets. Like, if we do more Deep Space Nine in this era, I will now only be looking for the Jem'Hadar pockets.
Please do.
Mm-hmm.
Please do. And tell me if you think that they are... foreboding and intense and like give you that feeling that this is a formidable foe.
The Borg don't have pockets.
They sure do. They have skin pockets everywhere.
They do. Yeah. They are one walking
pocket.
They're
one gigantic pocket. Yeah. They're like a Swiss Army knife of pockets.
They really are. we'll put a pin in that. And I'm really excited for an episode where we see a Jem'Hadar pull something out of the pocket now. It's got to happen. That's amazing. They try to explain the science and that all of your subatomic particles will be shrinking at the same time. And they try really hard to make this science make sense. I still am convinced they would die. I think shrinking would 100% kill them dead until they died from it. I do not believe they survived shrinking and re-enlarging.
I think that's traumatic. Either. Can we talk about how the plan to unshrink them was to go back into
which would
potentially make them even smaller?
Right. Why wouldn't it make them small? Why does it care? Why does it care that it doesn't know your original size? This is implying that it knows how big you should be.
Yeah.
And that it cares about the route that you took in and out. And like, why didn't it just like kill you when you left? Like, it's so convenient. It's we need to fix this problem. This is how we get you big again. Like, they're lucky they only lost an inch, honestly.
It was really... It was one of those where the sin would be yada-yada-ing around. But they didn't even yada-yada.
Yeah.
There was no conversation. It was, we're going to have to go back through the disc to do this. So...
Yeah.
And then there was, like, the little outro. Well, we did that. Now everything is great.
Now we're good. That worked.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. My next one was, this is probably my biggest sin of the episode, and it's really crucial. We are relying on O'Brien's brain so much. How do we not have, how does the runabout not have a map or schematic of the Defiant? Why are we relying on his memory? And Bashir is like, I hope you know where you're going, Chief. And he's like, yeah, I just don't see it from this perspective. You don't have to. You must have a map of the internal workings of the Defiant. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Use a schematic.
But also, the sin here that's confusing for me is they can communicate with each other on the little ship, but the communicators don't work to the big ship. right?
Yes.
Because they can only talk to each other.
Well, it would be a really high-pitched voice. That's why they can't understand it.
Just chipmunks. Just a tiny little chipmunk voice. But why couldn't they ask her to use the computer to help them with the schematics for the ship?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's not
use the computer.
It's not like they have to bust out a manual, like a physical manual, and look up in the index where all that information is. It's just like a, hey, computer.
Yeah, where
tell
is
me,
this?
Tell me which way I'm turning now.
Yeah.
Like if ChatGPT can answer this question now.
Yeah.
I bet it
could navigate me through. Yeah. I don't understand why O'Brien's brain is so crucial in this one.
I mean, I guess.
My next one is, when they're explaining the plan, Jadzia and O'Brien are explaining what everyone is doing. And Jadzia's like, it'll never work. And the crux of it is the Nog cracking the codes, which the reason that's going to take so long is because the bridge will give you access to enter the codes and whatnot, but it's deliberately isolated on the bridge so that Data can sabotage the ship, but no one else on the ship can. So it's deliberately isolated on the bridge. From engineering, it's really hard to gain control of the bridge. So the codes that he has to go through, that's why he's struggling with that. But they know that it's going to take weeks, so it's not a viable plan. Like that's as soon as Nog was just like, "Yep, I can do it. Give me even
17 days."
Then new plan, because this one ain't the one that you want. Like, and it's just it's weird that Sisko even entertains this plan when he knows there's not a chance of it getting done in 30 minutes.
Well, but that's not true because in the world of Star Trek, if something has to take days or hours to fix, all you have to do as a commanding officer is say, I'm going to need that to happen faster.
Yeah, and then it does. It's a Scotty maneuver. You always inflate the repair
time. Exactly, yeah.
It's fair. That's fair.
Let's see. This is an obvious one. It's an easy one. We don't have to talk about it. The sin is no one seeing the shuttle.
Yeah.
That is the sin of this episode.
Yeah. It stealth's pretty good.
Do the lizard people have bad eyesight?
I don't think so. They're hunters. They're meant to have great eyesight.
Okay. That makes it worse. Yeah. I see like a fly zip by across my room, and I'm in a room that has a ton of shit in it. And if I see something, I'm like, oh, what was that? This is a small shuttlecraft or whatever with lights on it. I just don't think that there's a way that nobody saw it in all of the spaces it went through, because the angles of the camera would cleverly cut to them running out the door, but they still had to go through the entire room to get there. So I kind of wanted to see how they zipped through everybody and didn't get seen. But then there's this one where they're like right in front of the guy's eyes, and he's looking down,
right,
but that's like, how do you not? Anyway,
I was like, whoa, are we cloaked? Like, what's going on? Yeah, okay. I want to hear them go. Can anybody hear a low buzzing?
Yeah, just something. Yeah.
What is that?
It was a little. Yeah, just these little sounds that would likely be happening.
I love that.
Yeah, that one was frustrating.
My next one. This one took me out of the episode, and I only noticed it on this watch through. It's the first time.
Okay.
But it's after Jadzia has done some maneuvering to get them to where they need to be, and Bashir is like, "Nice flying." And she says, if you like that, you're going to love what's coming up next. Eyes to camera. And then it's the long pause. Clearly the commercial break. And I'm like,
yeah,
you can't talk to me like that. You can't turn to the camera and say,
you can.
Coming up next, you're going to love this.
I loved it. It was so jarring. Stupid. I loved it so much.
You know they wrote that deliberately.
100%.
You know they knew where the pause was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
It's so rare to hear Star Trek talk to the camera like that.
It was so funny.
Stay tuned on our next crazy shenanigans.
It stood out so clearly.
It's so big.
And it was also, okay, so that's in line with her character? Like, does she get braggadocious like that? Like,
absolutely. She's
okay.
Very
confident. Well, that's
confident.
Even better then.
Yeah. It's completely in character. If Worf had said that, I would have been like, right. I probably would have vomited. But Jadzia saying it absolutely makes sense. Even O'Brien, I could maybe, like, give him a pass if he said it. But yeah, it was like immediate commercial. I was like, okay, I'm going to go get a cup of tea. Oh, wait, that's not how streaming works anymore.
I kind of loved it.
Yeah,
but fine. I'm glad that you're sending it, because it would actually be like, yeah, it was straight to commercial.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all commercials.
150,000%.
All of it.
I really, like, this one came up in the chat, and I have it too, and I'm going to pull it up on screen. So hold on just one second. The sin here is penetrating accretion disk.
Yes.
So we've talked about Deep Space Nine being horny as
horny.
Fuck.
Yeah.
This is one of those moments I'm like, what?
Did you have to say penetrating?
The accretion disk.
Yeah.
It's not even. It's such a secretion word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very, I don't know. Yeah.
My secretion disk does not enjoy being penetrated.
Just that phrase.
Yeah.
Is Stop. A sin. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, completely agree. I'm going to pull one from the live chat as well because it's a great point that I hadn't thought of. Why not beam over some more fucking air? Like, why? Like, she's like, I'll beam over a pocket of air and you'll be able to breathe it. It'll be thin. It will last 20 minutes. Beam over more. You're producing oxygen on that ship. Beam over more. Oh, guess what? Guess what? Guess what? I bet the runabout has space suits.
Uh-huh.
Get into the space. You don't need to be naked while you're doing this. Get some oxygen around you. Like,
okay,
I don't...
to be fair, they're not that horny. They weren't wearing clothes.
That they were wearing clothes. It is such a great point. A couple of people said it in the live show. It's such a great point. It's like, beam over more air. Use the space suits that absolutely must be on the Defiant. What a thing to just like, I'm not going to address this at all. They were damaged as we were transforming out of the nebula. Fine. Give me something.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you 100%. Mm-hmm. My next sin happened earlier in the episode when O'Brien was like asking the question about returning to size, and my sin is like, you're just asking this now?
Yeah, now, not before the mission
you're
started.
You're already in the secretion zone.
The accretion disk. You're going to be small.
Yeah, you have penetrated. There is secretion happening. This is not the time to ask if you've got correct protection.
No.
That should have been a conversation you had. This is a consent conversation that should have happened in the living room. I mean, on the bridge or in your ready room.
Yeah, it's not now. This is the meanest sin I would absolutely put into the video, and it's that the runabout is technically the wrong size. It's not the size that they say it is, because they give specifics of exactly how big the runabout is going to shrink to, what they're going to shrink to, and the reason that it's not that size is because the model would have been too small to light properly. So it would have been, the lighting wouldn't have looked right. They had to make the model this size for it to work, but it's still a sin.
I kept thinking about that too. Like, it just seems like this is not right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it was fun to watch.
I'm totally worth it. I love it.
Okay, what's my next one here? So, and I might be misunderstanding this part of the show. So this might not be an actual sin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm fine with that.
Right. Well, this is why we talk about this. This is our sin writing portion where we go back and forth. Go, is this actually a sin?
Yeah, is this actually a sin? Cut it.
So Jadzia is saying, I need to be able to see, get me some visuals. And my sin is stop moving.
Until you've got visual. Yeah.
Like the I feel like what the show was saying is that she's flying through space and ASAP needs to have visuals. So, and that's what I don't know if I'm missing. Like, I don't know if she was flying through space.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that might be argumentative enough where we wouldn't do it.
But then she does end up face-to-face with the ship. She wasn't in the anomaly, which was where they were.
No, she had it. Yeah, they had escaped. So, I think...
But then you just stop. It's like, if you don't have your shirt on over your head... Like, if you're putting your shirt on and you're walking out of your room...
You don't run to the car.
You don't run to the... you put your shirt on and then you get to the car. So it's like, okay, you made it through the anomaly. Just stop moving. Get your visuals. So anyway.
I think...
So maybe just...
She was wanting to make sure they were free of the anomaly.
My sin is put your shirt on.
And they didn't know where to stop. My sin is not that. It's the opposite. But yeah, no, I think there's a way we could sin that. My sin around that was that the blast shields were malfunctioning and the sensors were malfunctioning, which is very convenient. And it's not convenient, but it's like it's very deliberately set up so that we can have the big reveal of Bashir doing the brilliant, what's up there? And then his spin turn on the chair where he goes upside down has been memed and like gifted so much. It's like me whenever somebody confuses me with something I should understand but don't. And he does like the...
Yeah, that was great.
And just looks
I
up
love
and
that
reads
scene.
The Defiant. It's,
I didn't
yeah,
know it was
really
meme,
great.
But it's worth it because
yeah,
it was so
you'll,
funny.
You'll see it now. It's a really, really kind of notorious
Yeah, link me on the
shot.
Discord.
Yeah, heck yeah. Anything else, Ambassador? That's all of my big sins that I really had.
No, but I did want to know if 56-011003 was a callback.
Oh, yeah,
it doesn't spell boobs.
No, it doesn't spell boobs. I don't know. I don't think so. It could be. If it is, it's not one that I'm aware of. It could be somebody's car registration.
They put that in to, like, they'll hide things like that, you know? And
yeah,
it'll
for
be
sure.
Like somebody's birthday or something
well,
like
often,
that.
Often, the picture that I've got up at the minute is of the entry pad to get to the bridge. And quite often on the L Cars things, they'll have the names of some of the executive producers or some of the crew or like the casting people. Their last names will be text on the L Cars display, which is really fun. Like Michael Okuda, his name is in quite a lot of them as the designer of the L Cars. So yeah, there are Easter eggs in there.
Yeah, I wonder what that one would be. I was trying to figure it out because it was, you know, like on that little thing that they were fixing.
Yeah, I don't know.
So then my sin would be not making it boobies.
It's fair. It should have just been, look, that's Isolinia chip 800AI3S.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Okay, Ambassador. Well, I'm glad you had a good time with that episode. It's a goofy one. It's a fun one. It's one of my kind of go-to goofy Deep Space Nine episodes. So I'm glad you had a good time. With that, it's time to head over.
I thought of another one.
Go for it.
And I don't know if this is one either.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a joke. Because Worf was joking.
Okay.
But he did say that it was his first time to write a poem.
I think it is.
Do you think that was actually true?
Yeah, I think so.
Then that's a sin. Because the idea is that poems are written on big moments.
Mm, yes.
Has nothing
before
his loved
one.
Life.
I think it's specifically on behalf of a loved one, I think this tradition was. Look, they made it up for this episode. It can be whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah, but
not
that's
anything
still
that
like,
I've heard of.
So it's
they
only
write
to your
songs
loved
for
one?
Big moment. They write songs for big moments. Like, they will sing songs of this victory is what they usually do. So I assume poetry is specifically for a loved one instead of a song.
Okay, so he was supposed to write something for her to commemorate
this
shrinkage?
Mission. No, the mission to begin with, because it was an important scientific discovery, and then, yeah, he's going to use the shrinkage as part of the poem. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I just felt like there's got to be other moments in his life that were worth it. But if it's just tied to a loved one, then I guess I would have to look at that pass.
That was my interpretation, because the songs are what the Klingons usually go to. My other one that I just remembered was teasing us with some Worf poetry and not delivering on the Worf poetry. We don't actually get to hear. I think he'd write some great poetry.
Oh, I know he would. I mean,
just rhyme.
Did you hear his line?
Right. Mm-hmm. Tough little, just there once was a little ship that went on a little trip. It was amazing. And yes, I know about Kalar, but they weren't really together long enough for him to write poetry about her. They just doinked. With that, let's head over to Danae's Mind Palace in the holodeck and see what we're going to watch next week.
Accessing library computer data.
My mind to your mind.
Vulcans never bluff.
Okay, crew, it's time to test my Trekdom as we dive into Danae's brain for next week's episode. Ambassador, give us your brain. What are you seeing?
Okay.
I'm still so nervous.
Okay, I feel like the first thing you should do, because I always this happens when we're like bouncing off of ideas.
Yeah.
So I want you to give me something vague to bounce off of this time.
Oranges. Was that too specific?
Nope, that's fine. We'll do that.
Fruit.
Okay, so there's fruit and trees. There's people eating the fruit. Like, I'm seeing Grecian sort of garb where they're like, you know, like the grape feeding, which is not uncommon to think about when someone's thinking about fruit.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've got something
then,
in my head.
Oh, in the foreground, there is an open hand. Like you would assume that the camera would pan over and find someone dead. And there's a mystery, like a whodunit.
Okay.
That's what's in my imagination right now.
Okay. Let me do a quick bit of Googling. The first one I'm thinking of is Who Cries for Adonis. I'm just going to do some Googling to see if that matches as much as I think it does.
There's also sand.
Okay. No, that helps. That helps.
No, really?
That's a few things that actually lines up.
Well, that's exciting. Is it TOS?
Yeah, it's TOS.
Oh, I love going back to TOS.
Yeah.
It's some of my favorite stuff to watch, so that makes
me so happy.
Yeah, I know it's like quirky and stuff, but
I mean, Grecian garb, the hand is what killed me.
Why?
Because I don't want to tell you.
Oh, okay.
It's not exact when you, but you've just said hand, and I'm just like, it's Who Mourns for Adonis, like that. That's what we're gonna do. There's no way we're not doing that.
I saw a hand, and it was in the foreground. It was quite large.
It's quite large, is what I'm latching on to.
Okay.
That's. I'm just going to quickly.
After almost 60 years, Trek has done almost everything. That's right.
For
I could
real.
Say
this
something.
Is why this
oh,
segment
I could
is
say
so
something about
kiss.
Like just someone playing an accordion. You know, like oh, a circus. You know, is there a monkey? Is there one that has a monkey? That's
yeah,
probably in
there
somewhere.
Is. Yeah, mm-hmm, there's. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now my brain is. I'm just going to Google Plato's stepchildren, but I don't think that's the one. Yeah, it's really this is great. Okay, so next week we are going to, based on the prompts, people eating fruit, Grecian garb, open hand, mystery who done it, which means that we are going to be hitting Who Mourns for Adonis, which is season 2, episode 2 of Star Trek the original series. There is one specific thing in here that I think will blow your mind when we get to it. This is a fun episode. I'm really looking forward to doing this. Well done, Ambassador, for getting into your brain. Thank you for a bit of support from the live chat as well. that was brilliant. If you want to get in touch with us, email us whatever you want to talk about. We are going to be getting to a mailbag episode at some point, we think in August. So start building up your any emails that you want to send to us, and any themes that you want, and any episodes that you really want us to cover, and we'll try and find a way to get them into the show. Email us captainspod@cinemasins.com and join us on the CinemaSins Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins, to join all of the Trek people. But until next week, thank you, Ambassador, as always. I'm Captain Ian, and Chief, you're not going to like this.
Oh, and it's this is a story of a little ship that took a little trip.
Live long and prosper.
Called the Derpa Prize.
Shut up!
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Is it weird? Did I do something weird?
Yeah, you did something weird. This is going to blow your mind when you see it. Who Mourns for Adonis? Like, when you said Grecian garb, I was already thinking Who Mourns for Adonis makes sense. And then you said large hand, and I was like, okay.
So here's more specifically what I see. It's like a shot of like a long courtyard, and it kind of goes off into the distance, and then I can see like people walking around. There's like a lilac colored dress and the Grecian like kind of garb, and there's some like trees sort of lining the side.
Nick, I was about to say the same thing. Have you Googled Who Mourns for Adonis?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I don't even know what that means.
Good. Please don't. Yeah.
Okay.
It's what? Yeah. It.
So there's.
It appears that you've already seen this episode.
I. People can believe what they want. I have not. Yeah. But uh-huh. I have this very clear shot. And yeah, I can.
I mean, Chad's going a bit wild with this one. It. Yeah.
Really?
I've noted all of that down. Lilac dress,
love it
long
when this
courtyard.
Stuff happens. I don't believe you.
Nick. And I know you haven't seen this episode, and I don't believe you.
It's up to you guys. I can only tell you the truth but I haven't. No, I haven't seen it. I had never seen TOS until we started doing this podcast. Mm-hmm. So my
Nick
first time watching TOS.
Nick is incredulous,
well,
as
know,
well
Nick,
he should
yeah,
be.
Nick, it's okay. That's
as
okay.
well he should be. That's amazing, everyone.
But you know what's true? What's true is that when people do the Grecian style stuff, there's usually a courtyard. And so it's like, that's not maybe, there are some stereotypes. So like, but that's what I see in my imagination. So I'm really curious.
But this is such an important lesson in confirmation bias, because this is how psychics that exploit people work.
Yeah.
Like they concentrate on the hits, and statistically you're going to have if you have an audience of 300 people and you say, I'm sensing somebody that lost a parent that begins with M, and people gasp, you lock onto that person. It sounds magical, but when you have so many different factors, it's bound to happen.
Deep space neon?
Yeah, deep space neon. This is getting harder, okay? These names aren't
easy. Do you change it every week?
No, I've just decided to, because it was Discoverian.
Why is it just Captian? That's like perfect. It's
because
literally just flip.
Neon. Dang it. Okay, I'll change it.
No. They'll love it. No, they will love it.
They will love the lazy attempt at a pun.
Oh, I need to ask Aaron to come over and help with my audio.
Yeah.
My WAV file is just so tiny.
So tiny.
But you said that you were able to work with it last week, so I'm just going to move forward.
Yeah, it sounded like I fixed it up fine last week. Sounded great. Nobody has mentioned a sound issue. The episode sounded fine to me.
great. So our show just always sounds like shit. And they just haven't caught up yet.
Not that I'm a fantastic editor. That's the takeaway. We always sound shit.
How long is this episode?
45 minutes.
They're Jesus, back to really?
What do you mean, really? What? How long did you expect it to be?
A Bluey episode, 12 minutes. Let's be done.
Great, let's do. I will happily do a Bluey podcast with you.
Oh my gosh, that'd be kind of 100%. Fun actually, wouldn't it? Wait. What is happening with my hair?
You just went zhuzh, and then put your headphones on. That's what happened to your hair.
Yarn. Caption, you can't go live when your hair looks like shit.
That's why you put a hat on like me.
Everybody knows your secret, though.
Actually, it doesn't look too bad. It's a bit greasy.
Nobody can tell that it's greasy.
Just the people that are licking my hair.
Honestly, you should ask them to leave the recording studio at this point, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's weird that I asked them in here to do it, and then I immediately asked them to leave.
You have the right to choose, though, you know?
That's fair. I can change my mind.
Sacred choice is re-choosing.
That's fair. Now I'm
That is something that we need to tell you about right here at the start. Today's live show will be filled with coughing.
It will be
removed from the edit, which is going to be a pain in the ass.
So much coughing.
So if you're really off put by somebody hacking into your ear, it's going to be a rough one today. Let's go.
Okay.
Let's get this going.
Captain.
No, we're not talking about the hoo-ha.
No, we weren't. Even
you
when
said
I was
hoo-ha.
When I was deep spacing some nines, we still weren't talking about the hoo-ha.
You said hoo-ha, and I'm just like, wait, we were not talking about. Okay,
deep spacing 9 inches. Captain's pod. No, that's
what was that? Is that a saying? How much money do you think it would take to pay these people enough to put them all in a room for 24 hours just to have conversations with you and like just hang out
with me?
Yeah, you like
for how
put
long?
Them all together in for 24 hours.
For 24 hours?
This is my question. How much money?
$100,000.
No, way more than that.
Each?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fine.
I really think it would be a huge amount
of
money.
Yeah, I think 20 grand each.
And it might be $300,000 for Sir Patrick Stewart. Like,
yeah, just on his own. Yeah.
Just on his own.
Yeah.
But the amount, like, how incredible it would be to have an opportunity to just get everybody together, do a fun like getaway where there's music and maybe like a spa. So they get to kind of chill and hang out, listen to music. And then you're just able to go through and like hang out with whoever you want to because you have rights to be there.
You've almost described the Star Trek
cruise. An episode of Star Trek?
No. You've almost described the Star Trek cruise, which happens every year. And it's like a convention that happens on a boat. So you're all there for like 3 or 4 days and they have like loads of like A-list Star Trek actors that go on this cruise and you have like a certain amount of access to them.
I don't know. I don't want anybody else to be taking up my time.
Well, then that's different. Yeah, because the cruise kind of pays, the amount of people on the cruise pays for the people to be there. So yeah.
We would just have to be very, very wealthy.
Sign up to the Sin Clubs that we can raise some money to buy the cast of TNG for a day.
My story for the week is that thanks to your shameful your shaming.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks to you, the chat, shaming me.
Uh-huh.
And thanks to an upcoming CinemaSin script where we actually sin somebody giving milk to a cat, I have really had to rethink my interaction with my neighbor's cat / my cat.
Mm-hmm.
Because he meows for milk. And Ian, you've been over when this happens. You can confirm.
I know he does. That doesn't mean you do it. Like, kids ask for a lot of shit. It doesn't mean you give it to them.
Well, anyway. So I have now started purchasing goat milk for the cat.
Yeah. Special goat milk.
I'm not going to stop feeding this cat and making him feel like the king that he is. Maybe he's a prince right now and he's like becoming king cat of the neighborhood. I don't know. I want to support his journey. So I bought fucking goat's milk. It's expensive.
Yeah,
though.
It is. And it's just for the cat. No one else is going to be consuming that.
Can I show you something that I found that is totally unrelated to what we're doing today?
Right, my glasses. Yes, you may. Always.
So a long time ago, I was given this set of cards called sneaky cards.
Mm.
Play it forward.
Yeah.
I just came across them again. And so the whole idea is that you take these cards, which I have taken out, and it's kind of a cool, I think they're cool. You go to the website and you register your deck.
Okay.
Okay. And then your deck has a set, like a specific number that you enter in.
Okay.
And then there's different types of cards. There's connect cards, engage cards, surprise cards, care cards, grow cards, and create cards. Pick a category and I'll give you an example.
Engage, of course.
Of course. I should have seen that coming. So these are all the engage cards.
Make a speech in an elevator with more... God damn it. That speech would not go well. Make a speech in an elevator with three people you don't know.
So then when you do it, you give this to the last person on the elevator with you, and then they hopefully go track the card.
That's some boldness.
I know. Here's the next one. This is the engage category.
Start the wave in a food court or cafeteria. When you do, give this card to the... Okay. Lie down in a public space until someone checks on you. When they do... Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, this one's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Defeat someone in a duel. Challenge somebody to a contest. Arm wrestling, rock, paper, scissors, etc. That's amazing.
If you're victorious, you
only
give the
if
card.
You're victorious.
If you're defeated.
So you have to keep doing this until you win. That's amazing. How do you win? I guess it couldn't be with knives or something. It would have to be something with a definitive winner.
The first time I went to New York City, I laid down on my back to take a picture of a skyscraper. I literally had people just stepping over me without
stopping. Oh, are you kidding? In New York?
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, they see that stuff all the time. Yeah, without a doubt. Play the world's largest game of tag. Tag someone on the shoulder and tell them they are it. Then hand them this card.
No tag backs.
That's a terrible idea. That's terrible. That's going to get you punched.
I was thinking about this recently. I think it was just yesterday when I was driving Iris around, that when I was her age, probably like a little bit older, I had a Sony like Discman.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had like the little headphones that didn't even cover your ears or go in your ears. They were just like a really crazy speaker with a little bit of mesh on the outside and like a really thin strip of metal. And then I had a CD player and that was my entertainment. You know, she wants to play these app games and stuff. And I'm like,
yeah,
I would just sit in the back of the car and listen to the same CD.
But apps
over
weren't
and
available.
Over and over again.
Like if apps were available, that's what we would want to do.
I mean, yeah.
Like I just had the same like kind of I had like the Walkman that you put the cassettes into. And
yeah,
I just wore that Venga Boys cassette out. Sean says, anyone else have Timmy Mallet's version of Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini in the Head? Damn you, Doctor Who. I just watched this with Aaron last night. I'm fully up to date with all of the Doctor Who episodes. And yes, that is stuck in my head. And I think Link had asked, somebody else was asking how I felt about this season of Doctor Who. Overall, I'm not a fan. I'm not enjoying it. I'm loving Shuti Gatwa. I see where they're going. I kind of like the direction they're taking the season and the more episodic nature of it, but I'm overall not enjoying the overly heavy-handed metaphors. I think they're doing what sci-fi does best, which is to do analogies and allegories, but it is beating me over the head with some of them, and I'm not having a great time along the ride. Also, it would be nice if the Doctor actually appeared in one or two of these episodes every now and again. Commander Smith, who I don't think could stay for the whole show, said, speaking of which, just because I may not be able to stay the whole time, I will say that Odo's joke at the end, O'Brien and Bashir would die almost immediately if they didn't return to the exact same size because the oxygen molecules wouldn't fit in their hemoglobin properly. They even talked about this in the episode. So the scene is that
maybe
we know Bashir and O'Brien are smarter than this. It's funny, but the funny is still sinful. Yeah, they should know that if they weren't returned to the right size, there's a good job they died.
Those tiny little swinging doors are all that protects the feet of the people in engineering and the warp core from bursts of superheated plasma from the impulse engines.
Right? It's kind of weird. I thought that was a weird one too.
You know what it looked like? It looked like those people who have the vacuum cleaner systems that are built into their walls.
Have you seen these? Horrible. Yeah, you lose a fucking hamster in there. Yeah. Not that you should let hamsters run around.
Do you have personal experience of
Moving
that
on.
Happening?
Moving on. I have had to rip a wall apart to rescue a hamster. 100%.
From one of those little wall sucker things?
No, they crawled into a cavity and then we heard like some rustling. So we punched a hole in the wall and this little hamster just crawled out of the wall and into my mum's hand. Just like, thank you for rescuing me. Lost 70% of its fur through stress. and like lived another 6 months and died. Like it didn't really fully recover from that ordeal.
No.
But it didn't die in the wall. My mum was like, I know the hamster's in the wall. I cannot let it die in there. I cannot have a hamster dead in that wall for the rest of the time that we live in this house. This is a great sin from Sci-Fi Brony. Why is the Defiant of all ships doing the scientific survey, especially during the Dominion War? It's a warship, people. Don't send the Defiant to do this shit. They're
the
only ones in the sector.
I didn't hear in the beginning why they said that they had to do it.
No, just because... Oh, so it's because...
they're close proximity, maybe?
Well, it's because they were closer, and also they think that this could lead to some quantum tunneling technology, which will mean they can basically spore drive places, but they never mention it again.
Ever?
Never again. So the idea is that, like, this could help in the war effort by making their ships faster, but they never mention it. Oh, Link had a question earlier about Odo. So why is there a changeling on the ship? And Odo is a changeling. He's been there from the beginning. He thought he was the only one of his kind because he was found in the Gamma Quadrant. And it's only like a few seasons later that they find a race of changelings. And he's like, oh, I am one of many. That's interesting. It's a shame they're evil bastards. But yeah, that's why he's on Deep Space Nine.
And that's when he finds his bucket.
That is when he has his bucket from the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He just comes with a bucket.
Yeah.
Like the kids that are dropped off at the orphanage with their little basket.
Exactly. It's like, okay. Here's Odo in a bucket. It wasn't actually. They made a bucket for him. That's why it looks Bajoran, because a Bajoran scientist found him.
It's a Bajoracket.
It's a Bajocket? Bajocket? Chuck it in the Bajocket bucket? Yeah.
More questions. I have so many questions about being tiny. Does warp travel work the same? Does matter-antimatter reactions work differently when it's miniaturized? It's fair.
Yeah. Does the speed of light not get you as far as before? I was trying to think about this because, like, imagine you're a paperclip and you're on the Enterprise.
I want to be a paperclip so bad. I'm glad we're doing this.
Right. You're still traveling at warp. I just wonder if the size of the warp core, which, because you'd be a little ship, but still traveling at warp, still traveling really fast.
So the distance between, like, your seat in the bathroom is like 10 paces when you're your size, but it's like 15 light years when you're teeny tiny.
But if I'm traveling if I'm teeny tiny and I'm traveling at 100 miles an hour, I'll get there at the same time as me traveling 100 miles an hour, right? Because like Voyager is smaller than the Enterprise, but if they're both traveling at warp 9.9, they're both going to be traveling parallel to each other, even though Voyager is smaller.
Right.
But I don't know how that works when you get down to the inch scale. But I think if you're 4 inches and you're both traveling at warp 9, does that matter? You should still be parallel to each other. I think it would only matter when you get to the subatomic level, when you're talking about atoms and stuff.
Oh, I see.
Somebody smarter than me should explain this to me. I know somebody that works at NASA that listens to the show. Please tell us how this works. David said, Odo, Quark, and Morn had to go through 4+ hours of makeup for that one scene.
They sure did.
It's so true. I hope they tacked it onto another day of filming.
They probably did. They had to.
Because there's no way you're just filling all of the extras that are on the promenade as well. Like, there's no way you're filling that up for one scene. They filmed that with something else.
We are going to be taking a little bit of a recording hiatus.
Just a few weeks.
But
We're not talking months.
Not for long. That is going to be coming up. I think we can share that we're not going to be on air.
Yeah, I think we worked out it's going to be
all of July.
Yeah, it's going to be July. For your podcast feed, it'll be July 12th, 19th, and 26th, I believe.
We have some episodes that we're going to be releasing, but we're not doing a live show for the entire month of July. So
yeah, correct.
The podcast feed will have a little bit coming in, but we're not going to be doing a live show for a month. And so we are going to be coming back to do the live show starting in August. So hang out with us for the month of June, and then we'll take a little bit of a hiatus there and come back in August with some fun new shows for you.
Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show. No, we're going to Quarks, aren't we? We're going to go to Quarks.
I don't know. I don't know anything about
this.
I don't even know how I got on the show, honestly.
It's fair. And I actually do have both of the ships from this episode, which is annoying because they're back home. They're not in America.
Ah, you do.
Yeah, you do.
You need to bring some ships with you sometime, although that's a terrible idea. They might get really, really
They're
going to
get broken. I have ordered two ships that are going to be delivered here at some point.
It's also bad because Iris would want to play with them as toys if you brought them here.
I think I'm okay with that as long as I'm with her while it happens. It wouldn't be unattended playtime. It would be we play together.
Okay, well, I just want to make sure that we go on record as saying that when it breaks, it's not something I have to replace.
No, you don't have to replace it, but it will be a lesson learned. It will be an important lesson.
For you yeah. to never give a seven-year-old. What do you mean? Wait, I'm not telling Danae, you for not
Iris.
To.
Iris, no. You're the same. You're interchangeable in my head.
We're not.
I do have 10 Star Trek books that I bought for $4 from a thrift store. Because I was moaning at like another stall that had like the Star Trek books. They were like $10 each.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what are you doing? We find another stall and it has stacks of Star Trek books and they were like 50 cents, $1, 25 cents. Yeah. I was like, let's go.
Every once in a while, if you ever go thrift store or it's like there's a difference between a thrift store and an antique mall.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
And we were at this antique mall and there's all these stalls, right? And sometimes you can tell that the person hasn't been there for a really long time. This one I don't think had been manned for like 20 years.
Yeah.
It was and so all the prices, it's the kind of place that you're gonna find a sterling silver ring for $4.
Yeah.
Because they don't realize that it's now probably worth more like 20. So yeah, he left that one with stacks and stacks of books.
I sure did.
Danae is Scottish for don't do it.
It is. I didn't
honestly, do it. Honestly, that should be like just like my tagline. Just don't do it.
Didn't they do it? Pam, pam, pam.
Pam, pam.
Pam, pam, pam.
Pam.
Pam, 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 pam. Pam, 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 pam. Pam, 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 pam. Pam, 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 pam. Pam, pam,
pam. We are going to go now.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.